So imagine you are just, scrolling through Forbes's list of the richest Americans.
Right, the billionaire tracker.
Exactly. You see all the usual suspects, the tech founders, the hedge fund guys, the retail giants. And it looks like a totally complete picture of who holds the financial cards in this country.
It really does feel comprehensive.
Yeah, but what if I told you that list is actually missing roughly $14 trillion?
Which is just a massive number to even process.
Right, like that more than half of the United States gross domestic product is basically legally missing from public view.
It is honestly a staggering blind spot in how we understand the modern economy. I mean, we have been completely conditioned to believe that wealth naturally dissipates over time.
Oh, like that old saying, right? Shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations.
Exactly. That phrase gives us this really comforting illusion that a sort of economic gravity eventually pulls every massive dynasty back down to earth.
So when you walk past those massive Gilded Age mansions in Newport, or walking down Fifth Avenue, the ones with the velvet ropes and the museum plaques, you just naturally assume the Vanderbilt or Astor fortune like slowly crumbled away.
You picture too many heirs, right?
Right, too many heirs splitting the pot, some terrible investments, crushing estate taxes, and then eventually the family just kind of fades into normal, everyday society.
But the research we are looking at today argues that that crumbling museum is actually just a decoy.
Yeah, and that is what we are unpacking today. What if the fortune never evaporated at all? What if it just went underground? Today, we are bringing you a deep dive to completely shatter that fading fortune illusion.
And our source for this is really fascinating. We are looking at a highly detailed 2026 demographic and wealth model, and it's simply titled The Gilded Age Elite.
Such a great title.
It gets right to the point. The researchers essentially traced 76 root families from the Gilded Age, so roughly the 1870s to 1914, forward to the year 2026.
They looked completely past the visible registries, right?
Yes. They mapped out where this wealth actually resides today, and the data shows that the disappearance of this class wasn't an accident of history. It was engineered by design.
Okay, let's unpack this. Our mission for this deep dive is to figure out exactly how many of these descendants are walking among you right now, the specific, mechanical structures they use to cloak an unimaginable amount of wealth, and where they actually sit in society today.
But before we get to the money.
We have to find the actual people.
Exactly. And that is where most tracking efforts fail. Because if you only look for people named Vanderbilt, Carnegie, or Astor on, say, LinkedIn,
You're going to come up completely empty.
right, you will conclude the class vanished. But the model we are looking at takes those 76 root families and projects them over six generations. And to do this, they used Monte Carlo simulations combined with historical fertility and mortality rates.
Okay, just to make sure we are all on the same page here, a Monte Carlo simulation basically means they built a digital time machine, right?
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
They ran history forward thousands of times with different random variables and then just averaged out the most likely results.
Precisely the concept. And when they ran those simulations, the central estimate for the living class today came out to 10,113 people.
Over 10,000 people.
Yeah, and the absolute conservative floor is around 3,400, while the expansive ceiling pushes past 30,000. But the data strongly points to that core 10,000 number.
10,000 people. I mean, how does a list of 76 families balloon into literally a small city's worth of descendants without anyone noticing? It seems like an impossible secret to keep.
Well, it comes down to three major demographic additions that traditional wealth tracking just misses entirely. First, the model includes long-tail regional dynasties.
So not just the New York guys.
Exactly. We tend to fixate on the New York Titans, but there are families who absolutely dominated regional industries like the Cohn and Cannon families in textiles. They produce massive descendant pools.
Okay, that makes sense. What's the second addition?
Second, you have the extended in-law network. When a descendant marries a so-called non-elite spouse, that spouse's family often gets absorbed into the orbit of the dynasty's foundation boards, their family office services, things like that.
But the third addition is what really clicked for me when reading this. It is maternal line descendants.
Yes, the cloaking effect of patriarchy.
Exactly. It is essentially historical patriarchy acting as a cloaking device. Think about it for you listening. If a Gilded Age daughter married someone outside the prominent family, her famous surname was lost.
Legally and socially, she took a new name.
Right. So her children and grandchildren walk around today with completely different, completely unrecognizable names, but they did not lose access to the trust.
No, they didn't.
They didn't lose the family offices. They just became completely invisible to the public eye.
A really perfect example in the research is the Singer family from the Sewing Machine Fortune. Isaac Singer actually had 24 children with multiple partners.
24 kids. That is wild.
It is. And when you map that lineage out over six generations, the descendant network is incredibly sprawling. It actually branches heavily into the European aristocracy.
Wow.
Yeah, the model's central estimate shows over 100 living descendants just from that one specific line, and the vast majority of them are completely detached from the Singer name.
And then compare that to the DuPont family, who started in chemicals back in the 1820s.
Right, a much tighter network.
Yeah. Because of their specific marriage and expansion patterns, the model estimates there are between 3,000 and 4,000 living DuPont cousins today.
It's a huge network.
But wait, hold on. If we're tracking 10,000 people and thousands of them are just distant cousins, aren't a lot of these folks just normal, everyday people by now?
You would think so, yeah.
Like, I could be sitting next to a guy managing a local bank branch who just happens to be the great-great-great-grandchild of a railroad baron. Mm-hmm. Doesn't the wealth just dilute into irrelevance at that point, like tracing a river that goes underground? Just because you can't see the water or the famous surname doesn't mean it stopped flowing, but surely it thins out.
It's a fair question, and the model does account for a tier of what they term symbolic heirs.
Okay, what does that mean?
These are blood descendants who don't hold any real institutional power or significant wealth. They're exactly the normal everyday people you're describing.
Oh, I see.
But the reason the core wealth doesn't simply dilute into irrelevance is because the true unit of analysis isn't the isolated individual. It is the cluster.
The cluster.
Right. Over the past century, these families haven't just been having children. They have been actively marrying each other.
Meaning the family trees look more like a woven basket than a straight line?
Exactly like a woven basket.
Yeah.
The researchers identified 13 incredibly dense intra-elite marriage clusters. So you aren't analyzing a lone descendant of the Astor family splitting a trust with 50 cousins. You are looking at someone who is an Astor who married a descendant of the Lazard banking family.
Ah, so they're doubling up.
Exactly. Their children share overlapping foundation boards, they co-invest, and they utilize the exact same multifamily office. The power is maintained through really intense consolidation.
And that consolidation leads us directly to the money. This is honestly the biggest question of the whole deep dive. If there are 10,000 of them and they are pooling their resources, why aren't they dominating the billionaire indices?
Because of how we measure wealth today.
Right. If you look at visible registries today, things like Securities and Exchange Commission filings, IRS foundation data, public real estate deeds, you only see about $300 to $600 billion attached to these families.
Which is a massive amount of money, to be fair.
Oh, absolutely. But for 76 titans compounding wealth over a century, it feels suspiciously low.
It is artificially low. Those visible registries are precisely what the modern cloaking apparatus is engineered to avoid. Cloaking is the deliberate legal separation of title from effective control.
Okay, let's break down the actual mechanics of that, because separating title from control sounds like a law school exam. How does a billionaire actually hide $1 billion legally?
Well, let's look at dynasty trusts, particularly those set up in states like South Dakota. Historically, there was a legal concept called the rule against perpetuities.
Okay.
Which essentially meant a trust had to expire a certain number of years after the last beneficiary died.
Meaning eventually the money has to come out.
Right. Eventually the money had to come out, get taxed, and be distributed. But South Dakota abolished that rule.
So the trust can just live forever.
Forever. The trust becomes an immortal entity.
Wow.
So if a South Dakota dynasty trust holds $10 billion, the legal owner is the trustee. Often a corporate entity. The 50 family members who benefit from it, they don't own that money on paper.
So they don't have to declare it on a public wealth registry.
Exactly. They have the access, the security, and the borrowing power against it. But they totally lack the legal title that puts their name on a magazine cover.
Here's where it gets really interesting. It's like looking at a millionaire's visible checking account, seeing $500, assuming they're broke, and completely ignoring the massive underground vault in their backyard.
That is a perfect analogy.
It's like renting a house that your own trust legally owns. On paper, you're just a tenant. No one can sue you for the house. The IRS can't tax you for owning it. But you hold the keys, you live there your whole life, and you can pass the keys to your kids. And they do this with real estate too, right? The nested LLCs.
Oh, the nested limited liability companies are a masterpiece of obscurity.
How does that work?
Well, you don't just buy a massive estate in Aspen under your own name. A Delaware LLC buys the estate.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But that Delaware LLC is owned by a Wyoming LLC, which in turn is owned by an offshore trust. Finding the actual human being at the bottom of that paperwork is practically impossible.
That's incredible.
And then you add in donor-advised funds, or DAFs, for philanthropy.
Oh, right, the DFs.
You donate assets to a DAF, you get an immediate, massive tax deduction, but the money just sits there, compounding tax-free.
Yeah.
When you finally decide to grant it to a charity maybe decades later, it comes from the fund, completely anonymously.
So when the researchers took all these mechanics, the perpetual trusts, the nested LLCs, the DAFs, and they applied a bottom-up estimate of all this cloaked wealth, the numbers just exploded.
They did.
The realistic combined wealth jumped from that visible $600 billion to anywhere between $1.3 trillion and $3.4 trillion. But even that is just the floor.
Right, that's just the baseline.
Help me visualize the absolute upper end of this, because the true probability-weighted expected value of this class's wealth in the year 2026 is $14.7 trillion. I literally cannot even wrap my head around that number. How does 53% of the U.S. GDP just vanish from public view legally?
It vanishes because our entire financial tracking system is designed to look at individuals, while this wealth is held by immortal entities.
Mm-hmm.
To put $14.7 trillion into perspective, like you said, that equates to roughly 53% of the projected 2026 U.S. gross domestic product.
Over half of the GDP.
Over half. It's astonishing.
And I want to make sure we state clearly for you listening, we are looking at this strictly as an economic reality and, honestly, a marvel of financial structuring.
Absolutely.
We aren't taking a stance on wealth inequality or politics here. The pure mechanics of how you make 53% of the GDP legally vanish is just fascinating.
It's an engineering feat.
Exactly. But hold on. To amass $14.7 trillion, hiding the money isn't enough. You have to actively grow it.
Yes, you do.
You have to survive the Great Depression, two world wars, hyperinflation in the 70s, divorces, and inevitably, you know, a few family scandals. I always thought old money just wasn't very good at investing once the founding genius died. How did they pull off a 113-year winning streak?
That is what the researchers call the myth of structural underperformance. If you only look at the visible, heavily taxed public accounts, it appears these families only achieved a 4.07% real return since 1913.
Which isn't great.
No. The standard market return over that time is about 6.7%. So, visibly, it looks like they lost to a basic index fund.
Right. Which feeds perfectly into that narrative that the heirs were lazy and just slowly drained the accounts.
Exactly. But when you calculate the actual $14.7 trillion expected value, their implied real return is 7.33%.
Wow.
They didn't underperform the market. They modestly but consistently beat the market for over a century.
How is that even possible?
They achieved this because they didn't just passively hand their money to Wall Street. They invented the vehicles Wall Street uses today.
Wait, so they didn't just play the stock market casino better than everyone else. They actually built the casino.
Oh, built the casino. What's fascinating here is that taking their visible holdings as the truth is internally inconsistent with history.
How so?
Well, you cannot ignore the very vehicles these families invented precisely to keep wealth off those visible registries.
This is the part of the research that really blew my mind. If we look at the history, the first major holding company was the Standard Oil Trust, right? Created in 1882 to consolidate power.
Yes.
And then you have the Bessemer Trust, which is a massive wealth manager today, founded in 1907 by the Phipps family specifically to be the very first formal family office.
You laid the groundwork.
And let's not forget Andrew Mellon. The Mellon family fortune is legendary, but Andrew Mellon wasn't just a businessman passing down trusts.
He was a highly influential politician.
Right. He served as the U.S. Treasury Secretary from 1921 to 1932. He actively designed the U.S. Treasury tax regime.
Yes, he did.
He advocated for lowering top marginal rates and structured the tax code in a way that fundamentally benefited capital accumulation. So you basically have a founding member of the Gilded Age elite writing the regulatory framework that will apply to his own descendants.
Exactly. When you factor in multi-generational expertise in private equity, a century of compounding interest, and direct political influence on the regulatory environment, the idea that they simply left their money in heavily taxed public accounts is structurally implausible.
It makes no sense.
They built the vaults, they wrote the tax code regulating the vaults, and then they locked themselves inside.
Okay, I understand how you hide a bank account behind a South Dakota dynasty trust, and I get hiding real estate behind a nested Delaware LLC.
Right, the paperwork cloaking.
But if I have billions of dollars, I'm going to buy a private jet. I'm going to own massive seasonal estates. And I am certainly going to secure a seat on the board of a major university.
And you can't hide an airplane.
Exactly. You cannot hide those things. If I can't buy my way into a boardroom without physical connections, where are these 10,000 people actually meeting each other to coordinate all this? Where is their physical footprint?
Well, the physical geography of this class is incredibly specific. The New York metro area remains the undisputed capital, holding about 32% of the modeled class.
Not super surprising.
No, we are talking about deep concentrations in the Upper East Side, Greenwich, Bedford, and the Hamptons. Boston and Chicago hold about 9% and 8% respectively.
But the West Coast breakdown in the data is super interesting too. When we think of West Coast wealth, you know, we picture Beverly Hills.
Right, Hollywood money.
But the model specifically notes that Beverly Hills is mostly a post-1920 enclave built on entertainment money. The genuine Gilded Age cluster out west is actually in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Yes, the old railroad money.
Exactly. It is the descendants of the Big Four railroad barons and the Comstock silver lineages, people whose social lives revolve around places like Pebble Beach and the Pasadena Corridor.
And to connect these geographic nodes, the class utilizes a massive, entirely private transportation network. The model estimates a $10.9 billion annual transport economy.
Let me just break that number down because the logistics are wild. The researchers track 255,950 private aviation movements a year tied to this specific class.
It's a constant flow of movement.
Do you know what the densest route in the entire data set is? It's New York City to East Hampton in the summer with 18,000 individual trips.
Just back and forth to the Hamptons.
Followed closely by New York to Palm Beach in the winter. And the ultimate hub for all of this is Teterboro Airport in New Jersey, which is the default departure point for Manhattan-based class members. They spend an estimated $4.7 billion a year just on private aviation.
And another $3.3 billion operating mega yachts.
It's insane.
The physical movement is impressive, certainly, but it is ultimately just logistics. The real story and the real reason this class has survived is their institutional footprint.
Right.
The model estimates that about 11% of the class, so roughly 1 in 9 of these descendants, holds formal institutional power today.
Which might not sound like a huge percentage until you realize what specific institutions they're controlling.
Exactly.
We're talking about the boardrooms of the largest national foundations, major cultural institutions like MoMA and the Frick Collection, and elite white shoe law firms. But the data shows the absolute highest concentration of this class is found in two places: private clubs and elite universities.
The private clubs act as the social glue. The model categorizes these as founder tier clubs. Places like the Knickerbocker Club in New York, the Somerset Club in Boston, or Bailey's Beach in Newport.
And the numbers there are staggering.
Yes, the class share at these clubs sits between 45 and 60%.
Think about that. You walk into a dining room of 100 people at one of these clubs, and 60 of them are directly descended from the 50 wealthiest families of 1890. It is completely a closed loop.
And that social reproduction starts very early through the Ivy League pipeline.
Oh, the universities.
The model traces approximately 205 legacy admissions a year across peer universities directly to this expanded class. And once they're on campus, the concentration intensifies further.
Like the secret societies.
Take Yale's famous senior society, Skull and Bones. The model estimates a 35% class share. Over a third of the members tapped for that society are carrying Gilded Age lineages.
So what does this all mean? When you layer the invisible trusts, the private aviation routes, the club memberships, and the university boards, it seems to me that this class operates like an invisible VIP lounge built directly into the structural framework of the country.
That's a great way to look at it.
They aren't necessarily the tech billionaires on the magazine covers today in the Patagonia vests doing press tours. They're the ones who quietly sit on the board of the museum where that tech billionaire is launching their new product. They are the structural foundation.
And that structural foundation is vital because it is insulated from public pressure. Consider the divergence we've seen since the 1970s.
What do you mean?
Well, university boards and Fortune 500 directorships have had to diversify. They face immense public scrutiny and need to demonstrate meritocratic balance.
Sure, they're in the public eye.
But private club admissions and family office governance face no such pressure. The institutional reproduction system works perfectly in the shadows, converting hundreds of legacy admissions a year into the next generation of governance seat holders, entirely out of the public eye.
Which brings us right back to you listening to this deep dive. Why should you care about a demographic model tracking 113-year-old fortunes?
It's the ultimate context for today's economy.
Exactly. Because when you try to understand how power, influence, and capital actually work in the world today, you are naturally going to look at the visible top tier. You look at the Forbes 400.
But the Forbes 400 only holds about 19% of the U.S. GDP.
Right. If you stop your analysis there, you are entirely missing the invisible 53% of the GDP that is quietly managed, protected, and compounded by the descendants of the Gilded Age.
It completely reframes our understanding of the economy. The old money didn't lose its position. They engineered the appearance of having lost it, which is the ultimate luxury.
Wow.
True power, it turns out, doesn't need to be seen. In fact, it prefers not to be.
Remember that crumbling historic mansion we talked about at the beginning? The one with the museum plaques that made you think the dynasty was dead?
The decoy.
Yeah, it turns out it really was just a decoy. The real dynasty is operating out of a multifamily office in a glass tower, flying out of Teterboro on a Tuesday, completely unseen. And I want to leave you with one final provocative thought to mull over.
Let's hear it.
If the architects of the Gilded Age people, like Andrew Mellon and the Phipps family, had the foresight to design perpetual trusts, private foundations, and tax regimes back in 1907 to ensure their great-great-grandchildren would thrive invisibly in the year 2026. What centuries-long invisible legal structures are today's tech billionaires quietly building right now to secure their dynasties for the year 2126?